There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you here. And coming up later on in the hour, a couple stories. Had some questions there first hour when we were talking about what was in the infrastructure bill about the mileage tax out there and the breathalyzer feature that the NTSB is talking about. We'll get into that story and talk about what is actually in the language of the bill. And will that be cut out, or is that going to be what the Senate votes on, hands down to the House? And can't imagine them not passing something for taxes and breathalyzer. So we'll get into that. Plus, about time, you know, y'all have listened to me for a long time. You've maybe heard my opinions on the Saudi government, and I understand the realpolitik of having them as, you know, a strong ally in that region. But how much it bothers me to have them as a strong ally. 9/11 families now are pressuring President Biden to declassify the U.S. files on the Saudi role in 9/11, or maybe just not show up at their event. We'll talk about that later on in the hour. Plus, a lot of texts we'll get to as we get through this hour, so you can keep them coming at 343-0106. All right, so I mentioned my buddy Josh Woods was going to join us on the show. Josh with the Grounds. And was there any comedy in the fact that the Grounds had a groundbreaking? I mean, I'm the 90th person to make that joke?
Well, I mean, that's strategically we use those words. And it wasn't much of a groundbreaking, I guess, as far as actual breaking of ground. But, yeah, we had it anyways.
Well, let's talk about this. So, big news from the Grounds. What is the announcement? What are y'all doing?
It is. So, over the past 4 years, we've, between the board, me, various voices in the community, we've undertook a strategic planning process and, big plan, wrote everything down, came up with some ideas, put it into action. We've been diligently working on that. And really, honestly, Thursday was kind of the culmination of our facility side of that. We've executed roughly a $1.5 million loan that we'll be putting to work and reinvesting back in our area, which is just another way that we're committing to the city, the county, and our area and our community that we're here for the long run.
So let's talk about what that looks like. I was there just about 3 weeks ago. I've come out for a lot of different events. We'll get to the big event soon.
I know that you may or may not have guns, so I figured you might have been at the gun show this weekend.
I can't say where I might be, but the facility. I think y'all are doing a great job. So when you say improve, what are you getting bigger, or are you doing stuff inside, or what are you doing?
Yeah, so 4 years ago, I guess 2016, so 5 years ago, we purchased an extra 64 acres. We've been working on trying to find a way to activate that. This 1.5 million is phase one of kind of a multi-tiered plan that we're developing. Right now, what we're going to focus on is really finishing renovating the rest of the building, our existing structure we have here on campus. And then also we'll be reworking the midway, moving the rodeo arena, getting that ready for another phase of improvements to hopefully eventually move to a covered rodeo arena, offer up different things for the community. And then also we have a building that really hasn't been active. A lot of folks remember it as an ag museum or the old farm at home, as people like to call it. We're going to be renovating that and turning that into a 300, 400-person venue. So all aspects of phase one here is really involved around all aspects of activating every inch of of space we have so that we can better serve the community.
Wow. I mean, I'm thinking about, because right now you can put, like, how many people in for an event?
If you activate our entire building, do it just right, you could probably have close to about 5,500, 6,000 people here at any given time. And then, you know, across our campus, we sit on 95 acres. You know, on the busiest day, in a previous life before COVID, in a busiest day, you know, we've seen upwards of about 35, 40,000 people any day of the fair.
Man, if you're just joining us, talking to Josh Woods with the grounds and their groundbreaking, I want to talk about that timeline on that. You say not breaking any ground yet, but this is something we would expect, in years?
Relatively quickly. And the JCs from dealing with us here at the grounds, the Fishing Rodeo, when we want to do something, we just go out and do it. So we're hoping that our timeline works out. If it doesn't, we'll fix that. But looking at hopefully getting a good bit of this work, majority of this work done before the fair this year, which we open on October 29th. So we're getting busy, kind of backup plan or an ultimate plan of really executing everything by January of 2022 and getting all of our facilities up to work.
That's aggressive. It's great, but it's aggressive for sure. But yeah, I know enough of y'all think you can pull this off.
If the rodeo can build a weigh station in 2 weekends, I mean, we can do this.
True. Yeah, that's true. All right, let's talk about it. And you mentioned the fair. And, you and I talked about this last year, right, going through this. And, I know this is a tough subject here, but, I mean, what are y'all talking about at the office there with, where we are by October 29th, what y'all see for the fair?
Yeah, so obviously a primary part of my job is to stay in contact with fairs around the country and our trade association, International Association of Fairs. We're seeing fairs go off. The Calgary Stampede just happened in Canada. Saskatoon just opened. The Queen City X just opened. So our route, our full route, all the rides that we normally have are back in their own route. As far as what we're looking at here, we're pushing forward with a regular fair. We're gonna, I say regular. It's gonna be bigger and better than it ever has been before. We got a lot of changes up our sleeve, obviously, but we're pushing forward really hard. Worst case scenario, if we're told that we can't do the full fair, we know what that playbook looks like. We'll have our full midway and we'll just adjust around that like we did last year.
All right. So tickets go on sale when?
Yeah, tickets are on sale now. One of the cool things in August August and September we do is the twofer package. So two ride wristbands, two admissions for $49.99. That's a steal of a deal. So we encourage everybody to go visit us at greatergulfstatefair.com and take advantage of those savings right now.
And this is even before you, because I know, and Josh has not told me, but I mean, you just kind of intimated that there's some big, there's more stuff coming.
Oh, yeah. We have music on the grandstand. I actually signed a contract on Wednesday. So we're looking forward to announcing that. It's going to be somebody pretty awesome. We got a lot of stuff going on. We're building the fair back, or we're bringing the fair back at full maximum speed. So,
and you mentioned, I know I'm jumping around, but you did mention earlier the rodeo arena. So it's not a remodel. You're physically going to move it somewhere else on the grounds?
It is. Part of our grand plan as far as site layout and everything is we're going to move it over there towards the barns and move our bleachers, move the rodeo arena. Move all the lighting, do everything like that, and in hopes of eventually moving forward and, depending on what phase two or phase three looks like, maybe having a covered arena eventually so that we can take advantage of the equestrian shows as well as any other type of horse and bull shows.
Yeah, it's like, just speaking for Dalton and I, maybe other people around here, but I know Dalton and I are like fans of rodeo, so more rodeo, the better. The more rodeo that comes to town, the better. I like it.
That's the shirt you wear, pro rodeo.
That's right. I enjoy going to see, whatever. I mean, it's not always, you have different groups and different rodeo circuits going on. I'd love to have more of that come to town.
Yeah, and that's what we want to be. There's really nowhere on the immediate Gulf Coast here. I guess once you get over to New Orleans, a little bit into Mississippi, further towards Louisiana, and then really down into Florida a little bit, there's no facility. So we see a need, and we think we're going to focus on that and try to make that happen out here at the grounds.
Man, yeah, let me know what I can do to help to bring more rodeo to town. I'm on board, okay?
Awesome. Well, we signed you up for the first round of bull riding.
No, I said as a viewer. I still, you know, as a viewer. Now, Dalton did ride some, so we could get Dalton in.
I remember him saying that.
Yeah, Dalton did ride. I rode in the barnyard unsuccessfully many times, realized I would just be a spectator of rodeo, not a participant. All right, before we wrap up here, I got to talk about this. Of course, your job executive director at the grounds, but you're campaigning now, District 6 representative. Let's talk about the campaign.
Yeah, things are going great. You know, we're knocking on doors, getting out there. We got a routine of me get the boys up in the morning. We go sine wave. I come do my job, and after work, I go and knock on doors and ask for people's votes. We're real excited about how that's going. You know, making really good headway, and we can't wait to see what happens on August 24th.
Let's talk about when you talk to people out there. Like your number one issue for District 6 and maybe the number one issue for the city at large?
Yeah, I would say District 6 is traffic. Obviously, getting here and there and there and here. That's one of the biggest, the biggest issue that I hear about and always resonates. Also, the representation and the voice, making sure voice is heard across the district. You know, not a lot of our good, there's a few neighborhoods out there in District 6 that don't have an HOA, and so really focusing on the neighborhood and the neighbors and ensuring that their voice is out there is a real big issue. But as far as the city, finances is huge. That's the number one thing that people comment about, and also the ability to get things done by having a consensus maker in office and moving the ball from Mobile down the court a little bit.
Yeah, I'm interested. We get through election cycle, and when people are seated, I am going to be interested in hearing what the reaction is on this latest Amtrak thing, because I just had it in the first hour of the show. They said they're coming January 1st. They're coming. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I heard you talking about that. I guess we could get them a ladder or something.
I'm not stretching there that it leaves me scratching my head, right? That how they're going to, like, where they're going to bring the train to and load people on.
How are they going to sell tickets? Where are the people going to go? Yeah, it's okay. I guess that's an issue that they're about to try to force the city to try to figure out for them, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be interesting. All right, people want to get more information about your campaign. Where do they go?
Yeah, Vote Josh Woods on the internet, or you can find us on Facebook at Vote Josh Woods. Hopefully be knocking on your door soon if you haven't heard from me already.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, Josh.
I appreciate it, Sean. Have a great week.
You too. More rodeo. That's good. And can you imagine the challenges? Like, we all have in business, but you know, you're in the event business. And I know people listen to the show that are in the event business, and you're looking at CDC directives here. Our kids are going back to school, you know, with mask. I know my children start later this week with mask, and a lot more, guidance maybe than it was at the beginning of last school season. Maybe not. Maybe it's close to the same, a little different. And but then you're looking at events coming up, trying to navigate that. It's wow. All right. Hey, we come back. I'm going to get to these texts here. Also, families of the 9/11 victims tell President Biden not to attend their memorial service unless they put out the information here implicating Saudi officials in the 9/11 plot. I've talked about this for, the 11 years we've been on the radio here with this station. And this is of great interest to me. So hopefully you as well. We'll get to that. And also the mileage tax and the breathalyzer and all that stuff that people are talking about that's in the infrastructure bill. We'll dig into what it actually says when we return.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 125 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. A lot of text here. And once again, I realize the difference between anecdotal and a bigger study of numbers. I do. But I said this last hour, got a lot of text about this. Personally, I know four people, like close, three of them family members, one a close friend. Not like, oh, I know that dude. and it's actually that dude's wife, a good friend of mine for a long time, that were vaccinated that have gotten the Delta variant. Now, they recovered quickly. That's the good thing. That's when I, like last hour when I talked about the movie version versus reality, reality is the people with the vaccine have navigated this better, right? They've been, they've gotten, because the people I know from the round where the vaccinated people got sick, the people in our family that weren't vaccinated were sick a lot longer. Now, is that scientific? No, but it is anecdotal. But they did get it, and they did get sick. Now, that doesn't mean don't get vaccinated. That's the thing somebody would be in fear of. Like, you've got a, what, another radio talk show or a Newsmax host that died the other day that was anti-vax, and then Phil Valentine, a talk show host up in Nashville, has been fighting for his life. He didn't get vaccinated. He was anti-vax. The left is making a lot of those stories, you know. But they're painting an unfair picture because they're trying to paint a stereotype. The reality is, from everything I can read, that the vaccinated are going to navigate this better. But at the same time, it's fair to say they can still spread it, and they can spread it to unvaccinated people. So putting all the, you know, all the responsibility on the unvaccinated, I don't know that that's accurate. I don't know that that's fair. Okay? But the vaccine has been shown to be a good thing for getting people better. But this idea that you're not going to get it, these breakthrough cases they talk about being very, very rare, maybe they are, but heck, I know four people. And then on the text line here, several of y'all texting in that same kind of situation where you've got family members or friends that were vaccinated who still got it. So that's not me. That is not me telling you not to get vaccinated. That's me just saying, here's another thing. Here's a thing that's going on. Let's talk about this. You can handle that. You can handle that information, can't you? This sister says, Sean, look up the term breakthrough cases. Northern states are reporting as many as one in four people who've been fully vaccinated are dying with the Delta variant. I got to look that up. I don't know that that is true. So Dalton, we'll look that up. I hadn't seen that. I heard that 99% or maybe 98% of the people dying were unvaccinated. Goes on to say in this text, also the White House CDC's own numbers are reporting vaccinated people are showing higher viral loads than unvaxxed people. Yeah, that's something we've talked about, the danger of spreading it. So it makes me wonder if vaccinated people are the super spreaders. And I'm in healthcare. We have had our COVID positive patients increase 2.5 times since last Friday. No matter what or how someone believes, this is starting to get scary. COVID is mutating entirely too fast. Yeah, and Billy, four people I know of as of today that had the virus that were all vaccinated. Knock on wood, all are recovering at home. So Billy, that's, I think what you're saying, and maybe the epidemiologists and physicians will tell me why I'm wrong here, and I'm not trying to spread anything. I'm saying the vaccine, you should really consider it. I still think it should be your choice, but you should really consider it because of what you just said. People are recovering more quickly, get back to work and do these things. But at the same time, it seems to me that this is this idea that it's the rarest of rare things to have somebody who's vaccinated pick up the Delta variant. And I mean, just in my little world, right? I know that many people, and obviously several of y'all do as well. So I don't. And once again, that doesn't mean don't get vaccinated. It doesn't mean that at all. It means just reality is you're vaccinated, and we were told that that was going to be the suit of armor that would protect you from everything, and it may not be. It may help you. Looks like help you. But it's not going to end it. All right, talk about this more when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135. Keeping score out there on a Monday. It's Midday Mobile. Segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Lucky for you, they're online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Both easy to remember. So don't say, what was that guy that Sean was talking? His name is Trey, and he's been doing this for 13 years, getting junk removed in Mobile and Baldwin counties. And we've used them here at the business, used them in a storage unit, used them in my house the other day. It's a great service when you've got to just too much to do or something you can't physically do. I mean, some of the things that, like, yeah, they'll come in and, you know, you got junk in the junk room or something in the attic. You know, you don't want to climb that creaky spring-loaded attic stair ladder thing. They'll go up there and get that stuff. They can get small things, but they can also, they routinely are taking down like swing sets and storage buildings and backyard and the contents of it, all that big stuff. You're like, what the heck? They got it. They got you. So you can get rid of that and can do it quickly. And the nice thing is, too, they realize you got a job, you got family, you got stuff you're doing. They set appointment times versus like some spectrum of time. So they find a day that works for you and them, right? And y'all agree on a day, a window of time that works for you. That's when they show up. You can say, okay, I want this gone, this other thing gone, this. And they quote you a price. You say, yes, they get to work and get it done. It's just like that. Check it out, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or pick up the phone and call them at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You know what? And let me amend my number here. Thank you. And sometimes I'm just not thinking. So we have 567 now. So on the text line, I was reminded that I knew somebody else here that had the vaccine, and this text says the vaccine's the only thing that kept me from dying. And then I did think about somebody else, somebody I know, their children, both vaccinated, they got it. So, and I'm not trying to, because there could be some part of this that I'm not understanding yet, okay? Unlike people on Facebook, I don't jump to think I know everything about everything. But I can tell you just personally, you know, my life, and in my life, I now know 7 people that have been vaccinated that came down with the Delta variant. Now, that does not mean don't get a vaccine. It doesn't mean don't get a vaccine. I'm not on here saying don't get a vaccine. I'm saying, but maybe this needs to be part of the discussion, right? Just part of the discussion that you do that. Now, I know that, and then here's a bunch of more text. Gamecock Girl said, missed the first part of your show because a friend I saw Thursday came down with symptoms Saturday and tested positive today. She's fully vaccinated, so am I. So now's a big wait for me. So the people coming in, so they're saying the same thing. So and I'm just wondering if I'm this outlier that I know 7, you know, that this is a super rare thing and I know 7. And these aren't people that, like, I kind of know or have heard of. I mean, these are people I know. Who has just sent me a picture here? Brian did from at Providence Hospital. It's a whiteboard thing here. It says, in our fight against COVID-19, within the last 24 hours, 106, they cared for 106 patients with COVID. 82% are unvaccinated, managed 0 patients to come off of the vent, breathe on their own, discharged 3 patients with COVID, making a total of 1,208 patients. And by the way, like we talked about last year and we talk about now, God bless y'all in healthcare on the front lines of this. Wow. Wow. So Mr. Valentine says 2 things here. I'd like to see small businesses that ban vaccinated people shopping and only employ non-vaccinated people since they are known carriers. I'd like to see how that goes over. Electric vehicles should be okay. So, and so he's talking about this other story. So let's get to this quickly because I don't want to run out of time. This electric vehicle story. It's asking what's, and we'll tackle this probably in depth tomorrow. But it's asking, you know, would electric, is there a mileage tax going in the infrastructure bill? Yes, if it passes as it is, it's there, and it would be, they say, to get the revenue from people in electric cars. Now, if they can break that out and have that for electric cars, we talked about it here in Alabama, and have regular gas taxes, I don't want to see them go up, but down the road, we're going to have to do something about electric cars, right? I mean, they're getting to drive on the roads, wear and tear on the roads, and not paying the gas taxes. This is not anti-electric cars, but it's a thing. If you drive around in your Prius, and you're causing wear and tear on the roads, you got to be part of paying for it. So how do you tackle that? So if that's a mileage thing, that's a mileage thing. And the other one was the bill mandating the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration to create rules mandating alcohol monitoring systems be required in all new cars. Y'all think used cars were expensive before. Get ready. If this goes through, the bill says it's kind of unclear. It says it and doesn't say it. Okay. So in the bill, it's called, this line here, Advanced Impaired Driving Technology, on page 1066 of the infrastructure bill. Policy dictates that within 3 years, Secretary of the Department of Transportation through the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration should do the following. Issue a final rule prescribing a federal motor vehicle safety standard that requires passenger motor vehicles manufactured after an effective date of that standard to be equipped with advanced drunk and impaired driving prevention technology. According to the bill, the technology would passively monitor the performance of a driver of a motor vehicle to accurately identify whether that driver may be impaired and prevent or limit motor vehicle operation if impairment's detected. That opens up a can of worms from the things that might not be alcohol that do that. Passively and accurately detect whether the blood alcohol concentration of a driver to a motor vehicle is equal or greater to the blood alcohol concentration described, blah, 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 and prevent or limit motor vehicle operation if BAC is above the legal limit detected, or a combination of the two. Yeah, I hear you. I mean, you could say, well, this is a good thing, you know, I mean, keeping drunk drivers off the road, but they're going to get your blood alcohol level, or is going to be breathalyzer. They're going to take a blood sample. Probably going to be so the breathalyzer is going to be integrated into the nice looking dash of your new car. You know, here's your entertainment system. Here's your air conditioning. There's your breathalyzer. And what if you want to? I mean, what if you're a farmer? What if you're somebody's got land, just wants to drive around your private property drunk? They're going to take that right away from you. Could you get an exemption? Say this is a farm truck. We're just never leaving the gate here. Or even if it is. Well, I'd like to drive around the back 40 and drink. There's a lot to this. I'm going to dig into this and have more details for you on tomorrow's show. And then before we run out of time, I just have to start this conversation, which one that probably will go on, for the next month or so, as families, 9/11 families, are saying to President Biden, if you don't release the information about the Saudis and their link to 9/11, you might as well not show up at their family's event on September 11th. A story from BBC. The best reporting on this comes from the stinking BBC. It did. It says nearly 1,800 people signed a letter calling on President Biden to release documents that they believe implicate officials from Saudi Arabia in the plot. Which, let me say, since the 1950s on, presidents of both parties have played ball with the Saudis. Always have. It's obviously, you know, the oil coming one way and the buying of our military, our munitions, our planes, our tanks, and all that is a big deal. There's a lot of money here. Families go on to say that if Biden refuses, he should not attend ceremonies next month to commemorate the 20th anniversary. The attacks were committed by the Al-Qaeda terror group, investigators say, and triggered the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. 15 of the 19 plane hijackers were Saudi nationals. That y'all have listened to me for the last 11 years, so you've heard me say 7,000 times. The families say in this letter, we cannot in good faith and with veneration to those lost, sick, and injured welcome the president to our hallowed grounds until he fulfills his commitment, says a letter from the family members, first responders, and survivors. They call on President Biden to stay away from all three sites where the attacks took place in New York, in Virginia, and Pennsylvania if he doesn't do this. The families have long argued that Saudi officials had advanced knowledge of the attack and did nothing to stop it. They have sued the government of Saudi Arabia, which has denied being involved. Last month, the lawsuit saw several top former Saudi officials questioned under oath. The depositions remain sealed, further upsetting the families. And it goes on to say, it reads a lot from the letter, but it says the administrations of George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump also declined to declassify the documents, citing national security concerns. Yeah, it is both parties. This is not punditry. But this is a serious question, and I've had it for a long time. How bad would it have to be before we would not play ball with the Saudis? I mean, you know, you had the Khashoggi murder, right? And dismembering and sawing up and all that stuff. Yeah. Khashoggi also was a friend of Osama bin Laden in the past, too. Now, it's not like he was a friend of the United States, but he was working for a U.S. paper and all that. But nothing happened there. Maybe a little reprimand from former President Trump, but nothing more. And in the back, coming out of George Bush and Barack Obama, nothing on this. We'll see how important the visual of being the president, being at this event is compared to how important it is to have Saudi oil come in this way and jets and tanks and war gear get sold to the Saudis. use in their battle in Yemen. Me, I don't have opinions on this. We'll do it again tomorrow. Show's called Midday Mobile. Thank you for being here. Well, I tell you what, we'll come back, actually. I got a guest coming in from Southern Cancer Center, and then we'll wrap it up.